We all know that the Wilmington area, including the housing market, suffered through the Great Recession 8 years ago. For many people, home values have climbed back up in the last few years, and all it takes is a drive around the area to see new construction in many areas, such as South 17th Street and Carr Avenue in Wilmington, lifestyle communities in Brunswick County and elsewhere, and more. Our guests on today's Coastline are three people with up-close knowledge of what's going on in real estate in the region today, and who can point out some trends for the future. Cameron Moore is Executive Officer of the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. Cameron, welcome to Coastline.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Don Harris is the 2016 President of the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors. And Don, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And reporter Cece Nunn, who covers real estate and other beats for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. Cece, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
And I'm Cleve Callison, sitting in today for Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. I welcome you to join our conversation for the next hour on our Wednesday show. If you're a local homeowner, are you happy about the way your home value is going? Are you planning to rent or buy in the next 12 months? Have you had trouble finding affordable housing? If you're a recent arrival, what's your take on the housing choices you found here? Now is your chance to talk with our guests. So you can call us at 910-343-1138, or you can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. So let's get started right away with our chat. And I'm going to start with Don Harris from the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors. What would you say is the current status of the real estate market here?
I would say overall it's robust. I would say, but that robustness is in a specific price point. Below $400,000 is very, very active. Above that, there's some delays in selling.
And is there a reason for that delay? It sounds like there's an imbalance between supply and demand, kind of maybe at both ends of it.
Well, exactly. The under $400,000, there is a supply and demand issue. There's more demand than there is supply. That's why it's so active. The price points above $400,000 and all the way up to over a million, it's more of a supply than there is a demand.
Mm-hmm. So one is a buyer's market and one's a seller's market. Is
exactly.
that a shorthand
yes.
way of saying that?
Exactly.
Okay, very good. And Cameron, does that sort of jibe with what you see around here in terms of activity from the home builders side of things?
It does. I'd say we have a lot of different ranges, but that sweet spot, so to speak, that Don mentioned is roughly in that 300 to 425 kind of range. We see that really working well within our market. And when I'm saying kind of the market, I'm looking at it from a regional perspective of the Wilmington Regional, because the lifestyle communities that you mentioned in your introductions there, we have a lot of those, obviously, right across the bridge in Brunswick County. And we're starting to see more in that here in New Hanover County. So there's kind of differences in those markets, kind of what I would say probably kind of a subset market as we get into that.
What is behind the construction boom in apartments going on? Everywhere you look, I mentioned that also at the beginning, everywhere you look, it seems there's something happening. Cece, is this unusual or is it just the result of a pent-up demand coming to the fore right now?
It's definitely the result of pent-up demand. There was virtually no apartment development in Wilmington from about 2009 to 2012. And it started to pick up a bit between 2013 and 2015. And then this past, I think between 2013 and 2015, there were about 2,800 apartment projects completed. And under construction and in the pipeline now, we've got 3,500. And I would guess that that's going to go up to 4,000 before the end of the year.
So when you say apartments, these are all rental units, right? Or are some of them condos?
These are all rental units.
All rental units. And so we really expect that these will be mostly filled up within a reasonably short time of construction. Is that already happening?
They are getting filled up. Some of the developers are saying that they, you know, that in lease-up mode, that the I think lease-up mode vacancy was 93%, and it's, you know, overall it's the occupancy is 93%, and the vacancy is less than 6%. And
what do you mean exactly by lease-up mode? What is that in reference to? The number of leases signed?
Like as they're finishing, finishing up these projects. So they seem to be having a lot of activity with people being interested and also just being already leased even before they're completely finished with the communities. But they do expect that at least some brokers think, some developers think that could slow down eventually. I mean, because it is a cycle just like everything else. Mm-hmm.
Now, are these mostly aimed at kind of a younger population, say students or young workers, or is there some generalization across the board about that?
Not really. There's kind of a mix, and probably more baby boomers than people think. I know at a broker breakfast that the home builders had recently, they were talking about, some people are finding it easier, even in that set where you expect them to come and maybe buy a smaller home. Some of them are finding it easier to rent in some cases, too, because there's a lot that comes along with home ownership versus renting.
Yeah. Don Harris.
Yeah. While it's hard to realize that all these apartments being built are needed, they really are, because there's a dynamic going on in our community where we have a lot of the either seniors or baby boomers who may not want to purchase in their next stage of life. So they want to rent and have the availability of a carefree lifestyle. The millennials may or may not want to be homeowners right now, or they may not be able to find that home that they can afford with their current salary in this community. It's almost, there's a lot of houses, if you can find them, that's cheaper than owning or renting an apartment. The problem is finding that house with your income and your credit and all those things that go along with getting a mortgage. The biggest thing that Cameron and I pound on to our community is we have to have jobs, and we have to have good paying jobs. Housing affordability is a challenge here in Wilmington based on the average salaries of our service economy. So we need more white collar jobs that have higher salaries, because our land cost here is not inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So Cameron can speak to the development side of it, but when you've got high price for the land, it's not going to be inexpensive to build on.
Well, and particularly when you think of the three-county area here, of the three counties, New Hanover is certainly the most built up already, I would say. Would you all agree with that?
We would. I mean, it has definitely the urban county.
Yeah.
And it's actually, from a coastal perspective in North Carolina, it is the most urbanistic county that we have, particularly as far as the city of Wilmington. To kind of speak to what CC and Don are saying, I mean, it does come down to jobs. It comes down to economic development. And we hear those two terms, they've been echoed in this community now for the last 2 years, but they're very important. We're a very service-oriented, construction, real estate-oriented economy. We have been for many years, and that will continue, mainly because of obviously the beaches and the rivers and everything that we have and the tourism. But also from the construction side, we are a very desirable place to live. Folks are going to continue to move here. We are sought out not only from a regional perspective, but sought out on a national perspective now. And so that's important to note. The other thing, though, is the millennial generation, the student debt, not quite knowing really if they want to stay here, if they want to make roots, so to speak, into our area. And those are big factors for somebody that's getting ready to literally go out and work with a realtor and look at home ownership, because it's the next big step. And so that's key. From the multifamily sector, I think CC really hit it on the nail on the head there. I mean, I think it's a dichotomy of all sorts of different income levels and demographic levels. We have a growing population, student population at Cape Fear Community College. We have a growing student population at UNCW. But we don't really have a growing student housing population, student housing complexes. So that's always something that's going to be looked out there as far as their multifamily sector as well.
Okay. CC, you had your hand up there just a minute ago. I feel like I'm back in the classroom, calling on folks. So, CC, were you going to say something about this topic, about the affordability issue?
Yes. I emailed a fellow, one of the developers of affordable housing in the area, who's trying to do an 80-unit apartment community that would be workforce housing for people who, teachers and, people who can't afford you know, the, that those kind of rents that are getting into $900, $1,000. But he's waiting to hear whether he is going to be able to get federal tax credits for that project, because if he can't, then he can't make it work. And that's not going to – it's not going to be announced till August, but I was checking in with him to see if that, you know, had been announced yet. And, you know, really 80 apartments isn't going to – I mean, it will help, but I know there's waiting lists for the workforce housing apartments that exist now.
Okay, we actually do have some listener comments here. This is great. Love hearing from people. Our email address is coastline@whqr.org. Here is a question from Paul, who is with the Cape Fear Housing Coalition. He says, we hear from many realtors who discuss that there is not enough entry-level housing in New Hanover County, homes under, say, $150,000 to $175,000. And a reminder that many of our workers in the area are, as you just said, lower-income service workers, up to 60% and so forth, as mentioned in the Garner report. That was one that was commissioned by the Chamber a few years ago. These qualified buyers then end up going to Pender or Brunswick, which is fine, but also puts that many more cars on the road and adds to the transportation costs for employees, both in time and money, or they end up renting closer to work and delaying home ownership and that investment. How can we get developers, and here's the question he's asking here, how can we get developers to build houses for sale in this price range? And as an NPR story suggested yesterday, is there an answer in condos and home ownership? And I'm going to ask you, Cameron, if you could start talking about that, and then we're going to have to bug out here in about a minute.
But sure, I'll try to be real fast. That's a very long question, so to speak. And it's a very important question, I think, one right now that both our city and county are starting to look at and provide answers for. Paul is, as I know, he's going to be, he has actually been appointed, I think, from the city side, if I'm not mistaken, to be on the Affordable Housing Committee that the city and the county have put together. Ourselves and Don from the Realtors Association have key folks on that as well, because we're going to have that conversation, and it's a conversation that needs to be had.
Okay, we'll have to start the next part of that conversation in just a few seconds. You're listening to Coastline. Our topic today is housing in the Cape Fear region. Our phone number is 343-1138. We hope to hear from you. We'll be right back after a short break. You're listening to Coastline on WHQR. Welcome back to the second segment of our show. Our topic today is housing in southeastern North Carolina, focusing on Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender counties. And we're talking with three people. They are Cameron Moore, who is with the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association, Don Harris from Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors, and CeCe Nunn, who is a reporter for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, who covers the real estate beat. And we encourage your questions and comments to the station. Our email address is coastline@whqr.org, and our phone number is 343-1138. And Cameron, we were starting to address this question of how is it possible to get a more affordable level of housing for people in this area, housing, say, in the $150,000 to $175,000 range?
Sure. And you know, I think some of the things to look at is from the developer side and the builder side is going to be first and foremost is cost, is land cost. We're coming at it from a lot of different parameters, one of which is obviously buying the property, figuring out how we can make the numbers work on all sorts of different price points, and also trying to figure out something that's going to be readily available to be able to sell within the market that we're in. The next thing, though, I think that one of the keys, too, is that during the recession, what we did not see were subdivisions being approved for literally almost probably about 4 to 5, maybe even 6-plus years. And you can look on the planning board's docket and TRC, which is the Technical Review Committee. All of these go through the process approving those plans. And it was intriguing because when the recession hit, everything essentially shut down and went to shutdown mode. So you did not see those developments going through that process. That's really noteworthy because from the time it takes from plan approval to get that project actually to where you essentially see somebody on the site starting to develop it, it can be 18 months to 2 years from a permitting, regulation, approval stage. So from a housing spectrum, you know, we do have a couple years there to where we really didn't see anything as far as plans approved. I think that's changed dramatically just in the last probably, I'd say, 3 to 4 years, we're starting to see more and more of those subdivisions be approved, which means more opportunity for that.
When you say approved, I mean, what is the governing body here? Is that the county, the city,
or
the
state? Everything. It's everything. I mean, of course, you all have to get all the regulation, the permits, regulatory permits. That can be anything from the local permits, the state permits, and if you have to go through the wetlands and stuff like that, obviously from a national perspective, those permits. But really, approval is that you have the title and everything in hand to go out there and start that construction process.
Okay. Don Harris, you had a comment you wanted to make about this.
Well, it goes back to supply and demand. We're the second smallest county in the state out of 100. We have land, but not all the land has the infrastructure, the utilities there to develop it, sewer, water, and a lot of the land may or may not perk. So when we look at building a community affordably, the land cost has to be at a certain point where the builder can make a profit. It is profit-based. And if they want those builders to start, if we want affordable housing or more housing affordability here, then the regulatory agencies or the government agencies here are going to have to incentivize the builder, whether it's tax credits, whether it's something, but they have to make it attractive for the builder to want to build a product that he can still make money on and stay in business.
Okay. Cece, did you have something to add for that? Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Paul D'Angelo, for that. Thank you for that question. And let's see. We have a caller on the line who has a couple has a question. And I think Larry may be gone, but I believe we have Bert from Wilmington who's here with a question. Bert, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying your show. And I have a single-family home, and it's a little bit too much for me to maintain because I get quite involved with yard work and so on and so forth. I'm legally blind. When you see from 30 feet, I see from 2 feet. So nevertheless, I'm going to downsize into something smaller and probably leave the area. But my suggestion to a builder would be possibly fourplex or a couple of fourplexes, similar to like a townhome, where they could maintain a reasonable cost and yet make a profit as well. Maybe even 2 and 3 fourplexes in the same, like on a 1 acre area with some green space in the middle. And you know, I see it in my mind's eye that this could be a possible doable thing.
Bert, thank you for the question. I'm going to ask Don about this, and Don is pointing at Cameron. Let's start with Don anyway.
The concept is very attractive, and I agree with Bert. We have zoning that we have to comply with in this city and the county, and Cameron can speak better to that because we're going through a comprehensive plan of the zoning and the future plan use, and Cameron's been very instrumental in that.
Sure. I mean, Bert's question, and it goes back to the demographic side that Cece mentioned earlier, is that in our area we have a little bit of everything. We have a mixture of everything, and then obviously he mentioned he's looking maybe to perhaps downsize. You know, a townhouse product, townhome product obviously is very ideal in those situations. But I think also within the city itself and the city proper, we have a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of 2, 3, 5, 10 acre parcels where the developers are starting to come in. We'll call that infill development in planning terms. And I think within the new concepts and the new UDO that'll be coming out, obviously it's going to take a while to get through that process as far as revising the zoning ordinance. You're going to see most likely a lot of codes that are going to allow for flexibility on those particular lots, because if you come into them and you start trying to cut them up and putting setbacks and single family lots everywhere, it almost becomes to where it makes it unbuildable. But if you look at it as far as a cluster type of design, you can start to arrange housing in a different pattern, townhomes, mixture of single family and a townhome, and even maybe some duplexes. Those work really well. Carr Avenue, right there, there's a duplex community. The name of it is escaping me off the top of my head. Aspen Heights, thank you. Very well thought out and planned, and that's exactly what the caller Bert is kind of mentioning, looking at downsizing. It's common
that's
areas.
Student housing there.
It is, yeah. But those products like that, I think you'll see more and more on.
Well, currently we only, the townhomes under development currently, as far as I can tell, are usually in that $300,000 and above range right now. And another factor when it comes to townhome development is that you'll have neighbors who hear the word townhome, there's going to be townhomes built next to you, and there's a great deal of opposition for whatever reason they have, traffic or home values. And so you do come up against, even when developers are working on adding townhomes to their communities, you do run up against some opposition at times from neighbors.
So. Okay, we do have some other calls on the line, but Don, you had one more comment about this topic.
Well, one of the things that we've got townhomes, we've got single-family townhomes, we've got two-story townhomes. But in order to get density where the builders need to make a profit, a lot of times those two-story townhomes are going to have all the bedrooms upstairs. That works for a younger demographic. But for someone my age or the baby boomers, we want that master on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lifestyle choice.
Okay. We're going to go – you're listening, by the way, to Coastline. And we have about a half hour left in the show. We encourage you to make a phone call or get in touch with us. We've got a lot of email comments, and we have some phone calls lined up. But we can take some more, 343-1138, or send us an email to coastline@whqr.org. We're going to say now hello to Mark from Wilmington. Mark, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. My comment is about the older folks who have suffered from the recession. You know, many have lost their homes, lost their equity in their homes, have lost their credit, are living on Social Security. Where are they supposed to live? And what plans are being made for it? There's no more Section 8. There's a few HUD apartments that are, the government subsidizes, but there doesn't seem to be any plans made for people who have suffered from the economic downturn.
Okay, Mark, thanks a lot for your question. We appreciate it. It's a very interesting and valid question. Let's see if Don Harris has something to say about that.
Well, I respect your question, and I feel for your pain. I also suffered in the downturn. I lost all of my retirement during the recession from all the investments I had made through my previous career. What we're looking at now in a certain demographic, if there is equity in a home, if they own the home outright and there's equity, the reverse mortgage concept is something that's very applicable these days. It didn't used to be, but if there's equity in the home, then I would counsel someone to talk with someone about a reverse mortgage, and it could help them live out the remainder years.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much. You're listening to Coastline on WHQR. 343-1138 is our number. And we are going to say hello to Andy from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. I have a question about what's referred to here as accessory housing. I grew up in Chicago, and many families lived in two- or three-unit family buildings where you had multi-generational families under one roof. And it's just wondering where would you see that fitting into the Wilmington market, and what would, if you see it, something going that way, what would stand in its way?
Anybody want to take a crack at that one? Cameron?
Sure, and a lot of the duplex units, and essentially they're called, kind of mother-in-law flats, grandmother flats, so to speak. The city has had some conversations. I know the county, actually both the city and the county have had conversations in regards to that as far as zoning perspective and a land use perspective. That's going to be a policy decision from our local leaders. I think those questions probably would be better served and maybe answered during the UDO discussions of when the city and county starts that process, and actually they already have. And what I'm alluding to is both of approved a comprehensive plan that outlines where growth and those patterns of growth are going to go through the city and the county. And at the same time, what we're going to see along with that is an updated zoning ordinance that dictates the land use patterns that we're going to see here in the future. I mean, essentially the next 10 to 15, 20 years.
How cooperative do you find that city and county are in working with builders in these issues? Is it a difficult process to go through?
They hear the same. They're on the same side of us. I mean, they're hearing the same type of questions that we're fielding today. Not just from the private side, the public side is hearing it just as well. I had breakfast yesterday morning with Katrina Redmond from the Wilmington Housing Authority, and we had a great conversation. And a lot of it was really not so much answers, but talking about the challenges. Those challenges are not just faced on the private side. They're on the public side, too. Where I think you'll see, kind of answering, I think it was Bert's question there. Mark's question. Is you're going to see more collaboration, I believe, to make this work. And what I mean by that, more partnerships where the city and the private developers and the county and private developers come together to make projects work.
Okay, very good. You're listening to Coastline on WHQR. Our phone number to talk about housing in this region, 343-1138. Our email address is coastline@whqr.org. We're going to say hello now to Hank from Wilmington. Hank, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello. Hey, I have a quick question. So recently I attempted to get housing around UNCW campus, and I noticed that almost all of the apartment properties around there were owned by a single company, and that company seemed to be able to control the rent price around UNCW. And that seems like a huge concern for students and for student welfare. And I was wondering, is there any sort of municipal mechanism to address and potentially redress this sort of thing? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Hank, thank you very much for your call. Anybody want to take a stab at that one? Cece?
As far as I know, I'm not sure which apartments he's referring to that are all owned by the same company, but and so it's a little hard to answer that question, but I mean, I do know that, you know, rents have been going up, obviously, across the market. And but the apartment expert I talk to often, Richard Cotton with Multifamily Realty Advisors, he feels like that's a good thing for everybody, the growth, because if there weren't more apartment buildings, those rents would be even higher. And some of the older apartment complexes.
Supply and demand again.
Exactly.
We keep coming back to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really, I mean, it's true. And so and then these older apartment buildings are having to add amenities and update. As far as a student, I'd have to look more into that.
Okay.
That's a good question.
I have just a question about these new things that have come in fairly recently at the corner of Carr and Randall. I think we were talking about that. Is that primarily student housing?
That is all student housing.
Is all student housing. Okay. And is it getting pretty much filled up as far as you know?
I couldn't answer that for sure. Whether how much activity they've had.
Okay. We have a comment here that came from Larry from Wilmington. He wasn't able to stay on the line, but here is his comment. I moved from Austin, Texas, where there's large – we were talking earlier about jobs, you know, and incomes, salaries for people in this area. I moved from Austin, Texas, where there's large job growth, but also quality of life. I know that jobs help, but it seems to be the quality of life aspect that work best at attracting young folks to Austin. Are the home builders and realtors pushing for quality of life improvements in addition to economic development? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Absolutely. What's the impact of quality of life on this?
Quality of life here is everything. That's why we're all here. It's the lifestyle, it's the quality of life. But you've got to have a job. And you've got to be able to live. You've got to have food, clothing, and housing. And if we don't have it high enough salaries, people are going to be moving out. But we're still having an influx of people coming in because they want to live here. But because it's such a sensitive environmental area, it's not inexpensive to do things here. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
Well, and as part of it, to keep going back to this supply and demand, it's not just young people that we're talking about this area, because there's so many retirees that come in here, and often they have sold a house for a lot of money in the Northeast, maybe, if they manage to get through the Great Recession. And so they can afford to buy some of these, you know, more expensive than, say, student or beginning workers. So doesn't that kind of exert upward pressure on the whole housing market because you've got people there coming in who are able to buy more expensive houses?
Well, I mean, it does. But I think the other thing, too, that we're seeing is we're starting to see some Brandon approaches, kind of to the comment just a minute ago. You know, we have the Midtown has started to kind of become this prominent little branding feature, and that goes back to a quality of life.
What do you mean by Midtown specifically? Well, it's really what area we're talking about.
It's one area. It's right there pretty much as far as essentially where you've got the Forks at Barclay. You've got all the new shopping center with the Cameron Art Museum, and it essentially goes to about
Carolina. South 17th Street toward college and all that.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Okay. Midtown apartments and stuff right there. And I think at the same time, you know, we have other areas of the county that are really starting to brand itself. I saw recently in the paper they had the Soda Pop District downtown starting to kind of work towards some branding. That gets really back to the quality of life. Yes, we do have a huge influx of retirees moving to our market, but that also shows the fact of the quality of life we have. They're coming here for that quality of life.
Mm-hmm. But I guess my question is, doesn't that sort of push housing prices up if they come here and they're able to spend more than the average person starting out in his career?
It does have an effect to where from lot prices and housing prices, you do see an influx there.
Okay. Alan?
Okay.
We've
talked about supply and demand all day, and that's what the market driver is supply and demand. Yeah. But what I really want your audience to know, a lot of your audience remembers the early 80s when we had 14 to 18% interest rate on homes. Our interest rate today is fluctuating between, and it varies anywhere from 3.25 to 3.75 fixed for 30 years.
That's pretty incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's almost free money when you apply, when you look at cost of living and inflation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get any better.
All right, we've got a question that we'll take up when we come back after the break. And this is from Alan, who says, please ask your panel to discuss what impact the foreclosure market has on the market in general. I live in Brunswick County, and it appears there are several hundred foreclosed properties available to the consumer. And we'll find out what our panel has to say about that and other matters related to housing in this area when we come back after our break. You're listening to Coastline. Our guests are Cameron Moore from the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association, Don Harris from Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors, and reporter CC Nunn. Our phone number is 343-1138, and our email address is coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Coastline here from WHQR Public Radio. I'm Cleve Callison, sitting in today for Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And our guests are three people with knowledge of the housing market here in our region. Cameron Moore is Executive Officer of the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. Don Harris is the President of Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors. And CC Nunn is a reporter covering real estate for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. I invite you to consider making a phone call or sending us an email, and we'll try to get to as many questions as we can in the last 15 minutes or so that we have here in this show. Our phone number is 343-1138, and our email address is coastline@whqr.org. We hope to hear from you. So I had this question from Alan talking about the impact the foreclosure market has. He says he's noticed that there's several foreclosed properties in Brunswick County. So what is the impact? Let's see, Don, you want to take this one?
The foreclosures can have an impact on the market value of a neighborhood based on how many foreclosure sales there's been. But there's been enough arm's length transactions now that the appraisers don't typically use the foreclosures. But foreclosures used to be a good deal.
What do you mean by an arm's length transaction?
Well, an arm's length is a willing buyer and a willing seller. That's neither one are under duress.
Oh, okay.
To sell or to buy.
What we used to think of as normal.
Normal, right, exactly. But several years ago, there was a lot of foreclosures that were being dumped on the market, and you can go get a deal, and then you put money into them and flip them. Unfortunately, that flipping market, we think, is over because the banks are putting money into the properties, making them more marketable, and then putting them out there at market value or close to it. There's still some opportunities, but it's not like it was. But it doesn't have the impact on the appraisals as we used to see.
Okay, very good. Let's go to a question here, an email question from Andy, who says, I'm looking for condos under $125,000, and I cannot find anything other than student housing. Are there any condo developments on the horizon?
Not at that price.
And Don, you're shaking your head.
No, it's not going to happen.
Not at that price.
Not in New Hanover County.
Not in New Hanover County, yeah.
Okay, well, that brings up a good question. Does that mean possibly in Pender or in Brunswick County?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet. The condos have been a challenge. The federal government just relaxed some of the condo lending rules. That's going to open up a lot of condos to financing. It used to be that you couldn't get financing on a condo, but that's changing slowly, but we're making headways with that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Andy, for that question. And then here's one from Brian from Wilmington. He says he has a comment about the new apartments on 17th Street and on Carr Avenue. It seems to me that no care for aesthetics or natural habitat was taken whatsoever. Developers essentially came through and cut down every tree and tore up the soil. There has to be a better way. And that comes from Brian, an email question. Any comment, folks?
Well, I think as far as a better way, I think what it comes down to is many times, literally the public would be kind of shocked sometimes as far as the regulations that actually dictate what we have to take out to even start a development process. The other thing, too, as far as regulations, one of the biggest challenges we have here are going to be wetlands and stormwater. And stormwater, to get that to a proper grade, elevation, and so forth, to have the proper drainage so we don't have flooding, so forth, as far as on that piece of property once it's developed, it provides a unique challenge for us. And sometimes the topography has to change dramatically just to get that to where that project to where it will drain.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I live in an area where there is a fair amount of vegetation and trees and around, but sometimes they'll see these areas come in where, they'll take wooded areas, and instead of cutting down trees selectively so that you have shade around houses and things like that, it just everything will be bulldozed down. Is there a way to stop that from happening?
Well, you're not going to have a whole lot of deciduous trees here in Wilmington. So what they're removing typically are the pine trees, mm-hmm. which could be more problematic to a roof or to a driveway from the roots. So it's better to go ahead and remove those and then plant some shade trees or fruit trees or something else that gives it a little bit more appeal. But the pine trees, they're not necessarily our friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have several pine trees, and I have to pick up the pine straw a lot, so I kind of know what you're talking about. Thank you, Brian, for that question. Our phone number is 343-1138. Our email address, coastline@whqr.org. Many more questions going on here. We've got one from Johanna, who says, I'd love to know how the guests today respond to voluntary annexations by developers on North Market Street around Marsh Oaks. There's a lot of new construction of commercial and high-density housing, which is directly opposed to the county's low-density land use plans. I'm concerned about the lack of infrastructure in these islands of city zoning in county lands. Any comment anybody has about that? CeCe, is that something that we can expect more of, the little islands approach to things, do you think?
Well, what I have been writing about that voluntary annexation for the phase two of Amberley Shores, but there since they changed the annexation laws, I think there's only been six in the city of different places that have been voluntarily annexed. So I can't imagine there'd be I don't know if a bunch of these coming down the line and to have all these pockets. But it did seem to jive with the new comprehensive plan, the Amberley Shores, and the staff recommended it for these 287 new apartments. And again, that goes back to supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. And
it's not something the neighbors were very happy about, but some of the neighbors. But
yeah. And remind us again where Amberley Shores is located.
I think that's where she's talking about, near Marsh Oaks on North Market Street.
Oh, okay.
There's already a phase one there, and they had gone to the county, and the county would couldn't work with the county, and so they were annexed into the city, and it's been successful. It's a, you know, a full apartment community, and so they're going to have a phase two.
Some of these questions are sort of related, not so much to construction or housing development as they are sort of infrastructure studies for the city and the county. I mean, when you see new buildings and new units, houses or apartments go up, but with no change to the roads, and so roads that were designed to accommodate a certain flow of traffic now are accommodating much larger flows of traffic. Are there provisions that the city or the county or the state works with, Don, with developers as far as putting in these kind of infrastructure things? Are there regulations about that?
Let me yield that to Cameron. He would be better.
Okay.
I'm able to answer that
Yeah,
question.
Cameron?
Sure, by all means. I mean, developers first and foremost have to do a TIA, which is basically a transportation impact analysis. And that analysis is done if you're in the city, in the county here in New Hanover, and typically if you're in Brunswick County through the planning department at that local level to begin with. They have the Metropolitan Planning Organization that's housed over here in the city, and we go through that process. There are standards that apply to that, thresholds that apply. There's all sorts of different ratios that we have to abide by as far as parking and also ingress and egress. Not only that, the DOT gets involved. So there are standards that apply to those projects. And many times what you'll find on projects is that the turning lanes – well, actually, I'll kind of use in Brunswick County that – Michigan left turn, as it's referred to over there, a super street pattern. A lot of the monies that were combined to put that in were actually developer-based monies. They came from the private side. They were not public monies that were used. And that's kind of what we're going to start to see. That's kind of the new way from NCDOT.
Now, you're going to have to define the Michigan turn for me here. Is that where you go past something and then come back at from the other direction?
So
is that what we mean
typically
by that?
You're looking at a four-way stop has anywhere from about 24 to 32 conflict points, and those are conflict points. It means that essentially you could get into an accident if you're in an automobile or a pedestrian or a bike. What the Michigan left turn is when you get in front of the Walmart and in front of Brunswick Forest and Compass Point, essentially is that you are designed to take a right and then yield to the left to kind of come back around. So in other words, you can't take a left-hand turn across incoming traffic. So they spread the intersection out. When it was first designed, of course, a lot of, I wouldn't say outcry, but a lot of questions became of this is going to work. And I must say, for the most part, it has worked. The other thing that you're starting to see is a lot more roundabouts and pedestrians.
I was going to ask you about roundabouts.
We have, I have go around one every day on Middle Sound Loop Road. But I come back to the comprehensive plan, and I can't stress enough the zoning ordinances that we have are from the 60s and 70s. That's what we're designing by. That's what we're designing projects by. I think everyone would agree, and all your listeners agree, that we are way beyond the 1960s and 70s to be designing projects these days.
Yeah.
And so the comprehensive plan starts to really outline a lot of different strategies known as complete streets, which means multimodal streets. It brings in not only the car spectrum, but it also brings in transportation networks just as far as public transportation. It also brings in the pedestrian inside of that, too. So I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that.
Okay. We have a comment from a caller that came in a few minutes ago. This is from Steve Rassen, and Steve says hello to Don.
Hello, Steve.
And he says he wants to let an earlier caller know that he lives in a condo complex with available condos under $125,000. And I guess I'll go ahead and mention the name of it. It's Koval Gardens Condos.
Koval.
So
okay, that's over there off Koval. That's soon going to be Independence over to Martin Luther King Parkway eventually in our lifetime.
Good. Then you mean we're all going to live a long time, is what you're saying?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you, Steve, for that call. Let's see. Here's a comment from Lynn, who sent an email. She says, it seems to me we need city, county, state zoning ordinances that would mandate 5 to 10% affordable / rental housing in all development. This would be good for folks who need housing, but also helps with diversity that is desperately needed in this area. Anybody have a comment?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier in our show the Affordable Housing Task Force that the city and the county has jointly put together. What she is referring to is inclusionary zoning. That's something from the home builder side. It presents unique challenges for us. I mean, essentially, you are starting to set the rate as far as the housing and the profit level. And really, we have some challenges with that. I think that discussion will probably continue a little bit in the city and county joint task force. But I do understand what she's saying, and I do understand what she's where she's coming from. But I think it also presents challenge. It's not a silver bullet to provide affordable housing.
And I will state that the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors, we've made a statement where we're not in favor of inclusionary zoning. We do not think that's the right way to go in this area.
Okay. Here's a comment. You're listening to Coastline at WHQR. We may have time for one more phone call at 343-1138, but we do have a couple more email comments, including this one from Bonnie, who says the panel is talking about new housing, but Wilmington has many older neighborhoods close to downtown and to UNCW. A focus on rehab would improve living options and could help with crime and quality of life, et cetera, et cetera.
If you can find the house at an affordable price to rehab it and resell it, then it works.
What if they're not interested in reselling it? What if they just want a place to live and maybe upgrade it?
If they own it and want to upgrade it, if they've got cash, great. If not, they're going to have to take a get a reappraisal or appraisal and get a refi, take the equity out, and redevelop it. It's a great idea.
The only thing I'd add to that, though, is the sort of a shortage of folks who can help you with that as far as on the contractor side.
Yes.
And when I say shortage, I mean even just getting someone on the phone to try to make kind of a simple renovation to your house can be difficult
now. To return a phone call could be difficult.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
Not the case in 2007, 2008, but maybe the case now.
Right.
We're going to see a lot of redevelopment in the area. Some of the houses, I know one in particular over on Pettigrew Street in Pine Valley. We were going to sell it, but prior to doing that, it got caught on fire. So we literally had a fire sale, but we sold it very inexpensively. A developer or rehab guy came in and made a fantastic, gorgeous house and sold it for over $300,000 in Pine Valley.
Do you think – I have some friends who are just obsessed about HGTV and these shows with the Property Brothers, and they watch all the shows about flipping and about –
Never watch it.
About doing this. But have you seen that come about as people are looking at houses? They say, oh, I saw this on TV, and I really want that in my house.
I watch them too. They're great shows. But to remember, those are shows that are literally taped essentially over the course of 6 months, and you see it for 30 minutes. So buyer really needs to be aware and be aware of your surroundings and be aware of what you're getting yourself into. I cannot stress enough to call either myself or look online at our website and try to find a reputable contractor. Make sure you don't go alone.
Yeah. Yep, and probably get multiple bids, too. That's something we learned to our sorrow a few years ago.
Right. What's critical about those shows, they are taped typically in a large metropolitan area.
Right.
Again, we're the second smallest county in North Carolina. We have approximately 210,000 people total. This is our MSA, is 200,000 people. They're looking at, a million people live in this demographic area. There's a lot of properties that could be rehabbed. We don't have that potential here.
A couple more comments because we're getting near the end of our time on the show today. This is from Jeffrey. One guest suggested that government give builders some incentives to reduce their costs. He says, I own a condominium that I'd like to sell, but if the government subsidizes builders, the value of existing homes would be depressed unless it also finds a way to subsidize owners of existing homes. Okay, thank you very much for that comment, Jeffrey. And let's see, Susan from Whiteville says, I live in Whiteville. Although we have had a recent rush in home purchases, there's still many smaller homes under $100,000 available here. We've seen people from Wilmington already who have moved here and telecommute. We've also noticed that the traffic is much heavier going into Wilmington when we make a trek over there for recreation or whatever. So thank you, Susan, for that. And one more quick comment from Paul, actually, that's a question. I don't think we have time for that question, Paul, but you asked a question earlier, and I'm glad you did. Thank you for that. You're listening to Coastline. My guests today have been Cameron Moore from the Home Builders Association, Wilmington, Cape Fear, Home Builders Association. Thank you very much for being here, Cameron.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Don Harris is from the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors. Thank you, Don.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And Cece Nunn, who covers real estate and other beats for the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, a fine publication. Thank
That's
you,
right.
Cece.
Thank you, Cleve.
Okay. Glad you're here. And join us next week at this time for Coastline with your regular host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Coastline's producer is Isabel Shepherd, who was also our phone screener and Twitter wrangler today. Ken Campbell was our audio engineer. I'm Cleve Callison. I'm the executive producer of Coastline.